My name is Myra Wigman. We're in a session of Arts in a Preschool Child. We have several children with us, so you will also hear, as part of the discussion today, the sound effects of children. I guess I'd like to say to all of you that the arts are really not to make artists. And the experience that children have in painting and working with clay and singing and dancing and building with blocks are the things that are going to help them concentrate, be able to relate to other people, be able to relate to the world. And so when I'm talking about arts for preschoolers, that's my purpose, is to give the child a chance to get to know himself and other people and materials. And you may discover that your child does fantastic things. And to me, it was a great relief when I discovered that when my little infant was rubbing food all over the tray, it wasn't just making a mess to annoy me. She was actually experimenting with material and colors. You know, if you mix carrots and mashed potatoes and something green together, very interesting things happen on your tray. And that really is a first step in the visual arts. So for me, it helped me as a parent to realize that the banging and the kicking and the yelling, sometimes if I looked at it as a very primitive artistic expression of my child, helped me get through some times in which my adult standards for neatness and quiet were up against the child's instincts to explore and experience. For those of you that have little infants, there are some very important pre-art experiences. Every artist who works is from the sense basis. So musicians first hear sounds, and they listen to a lot of sounds before they start to create music. The same with your little infant. The worst thing you can do is to shut them away in quiet. Keep them in ordinary sounds. Talk to them constantly. It will also help their verbal speech development. But they hear the music of your language even before they can make the words. And children that are talked to learn a lot about social interaction too. So listening to environmental sounds and talking about it. Ooh, did you hear a train whistle? That's a whistle. You know, you're teaching them the word, and you're also responding. The child's face, the abnormal hearing infant's going to light up when he hears a new sound. And that's a shared, really a shared little mini arts experience. So sound environments are very helpful, stimulating things for young children. The same with smells. My older girls now with the baby says, have time to say, ooh, yuck, when he has a dirty diaper. You know, not, at least, you know, he's aware of the smell. But also when you're cooking, you know, you might talk about the smells. Let them smell spices that aren't going to make them sneeze. Now here we're talking a little bit more about a toddler than a tiny infant. Taste too. Some children are more determined to eat what you eat. But I remember the expression on my six-month-old daughter's face when our neighbor, who's a grandmother, offered her a lick of ice cream. Oh, it's like, geez, this is neat stuff. And I think there's nothing wrong with that. You know, you have to use good sense. And you certainly don't want to be giving the tiny infant foods they shouldn't have. But don't be afraid to let them taste things that are safe. Or to see a variety of things. We know that infants respond to the human face. They respond to bright colors. So don't be afraid of putting bright patterns up in their rooms or taking them outside and showing them flowers, letting them touch flowers. Even a tiny baby will really respond to bright colors, strong shapes. And so take them with you and share the joy of a bright poppy on a spring morning. That will really help your child to begin to experience the environment, and from there they will then go into their own experimentation and lead into the arts. One thing I try to do, and I think the third time around I'm probably, everyone says you're more relaxed, but I guess I say to in my own head, is it going to kill him if he touches it? Now that's an overstatement. I think you really need to say, is it going to harm the child to touch it? Or will the child harm the object? But that doesn't mean a child can never touch a pretty glass bird. You know, I can hold the bird while my child touches it. So I think, if you can think in your own mind, how can I facilitate my child exploring the world? You can really allow them to touch and experience many more things than we sort of ordinarily allow children to touch and experience. Earth, mud, sand, clay, wind, water, even fire are the basic things that we all are very attracted to. And little children also are attracted to these things. And with the exception of fire, they need to experience earth, mud, sand, clay, wind. And I have, my friend who's an artist actually put his little girl out in the rain puddles on a warm summer rain, gentle rain, got her in old clothes and let her sit out in the gentle rain. She played in the puddles, had a wonderful time. Now, I have to say, I've let my kids go out with umbrellas, you know, the whole thing. But I think it really shows his level of being open to letting his little girl experience the elements. Now, again, he had safety in mind. It was warm. She was not going to catch cold. But I thought, what a marvelous way to be open and to allow your child to experience those very elemental things. And you have to think how you can facilitate it. Last year, my little boy had a pacifier in his mouth at all times when he was in the sand, because if he didn't, it was, you know, a big handful in the mouth. So tolerate dirt and mess and letting your child get wet. If it's warm, it's not going to hurt them, and you can always wash the clothes or put the oldest, most stained clothes on. That would be very helpful to them in future playing. It's helpful in your own home if you can find places that can be left messy. And we've got the older kids now. My husband fixed up a very beautiful area in the basement. He painted a chest, bright colors for all their art supplies. It's always just awful. When I get on their case and we clean it up and put all the yarn in one box and the paint in one place, and you go in 2 days later, it's a wreck again. And what I finally decided is, it's their space to work. And the thing to remember is children are never really finished with something. Adults get finished, but kids don't. And so their natural tendency is to leave this pile of paper and glue out on the table. And, you know, while I think we need to teach them neatness, I think there comes a point we have to just tolerate the mess. We have one wall that we never, ever got repainted in our home from the older kids being preschoolers, where they did just watercolors. At first we thought we could scrub it off. And then we found out that it kind of soaked into the plaster, and it's going to need repainting. Well, it's only been 12 years, and it still isn't repainted. Someday we will repaint it, but it's not in a very prominent area of the house, and so it was just the paint area. So if you've got a basement or a little corner or outside, you know, if you live in an apartment and you don't have a place like that, take the paint outside so that you can dribble and not worry about it. So I guess the two key things when we're talking about very little children is to stimulate them and to tolerate. Because when a little child paints, you know, there's a lot of difference. And there's always going to be some mess with the drawing. I feel like I'm doing a lot of talking, and I really kind of do not want to do that. I'm going to go a little further, and then I'd like to get some input from you. When your child first starts to make marks on a paper, there's a real joy of changing the surface. And you can share that joy. Look what you did! Okay, now if it's on the wall, the joy is not so great. And I think there has to be that sense of this is a right place to draw and this is not a right place to draw. But the little child will first do uncontrolled scribbles just for the joy of making a mark. And you can share that. Wow, look what you did. Then they will go to controlling the scribble. And one of the first things you'll see is this circle. And that means they're getting more motor control. They're still not anywhere near ready to make pictures. But now their hand movements are more controlled. Then they'll suddenly someday see something in their scribbles. Melina once did a big circle and two little circles in it and said, man, man. And I was thrilled. Because when a child does something like that, it really says to us that they are a human being. And that's suddenly now a part of the circle of humanity. And that is, to me, very exciting as a parent. The important thing is to wait for them to name what they do. Don't ask them, well, what did you make? Because quite often they really haven't made anything. They have just experienced the material. But they will start naming, and you may not see the thing that they have made. So one of the good things you can do when the toddler is starting to scribble and then label what they have done is to say, tell me about this. But wait for them first to give the clue. Things you can say to the younger child are, oh, I like those lines, or you're really working hard, or look what you did, you made all these lines. But we need to accept where the child is and take leadership from the child as far as when they will enter the pictorial stage. I'm not even going to give you the ages. It kind of happens between 3 and 5 when they start drawing things. But even that is deceptive. I was working with one little boy in a preschool, and he must have been 3 or 4. He'd drawn and painted a wonderful picture of his family hunting Easter eggs. And there were the eggs, and there were the children, and it was so happy and beautiful. And I turned to some other kids, and I came back to Jeff, and it was all black. And I said to Jeff, oh, well, what happened to your family? And he said, it got nighttime, and they all went to bed. I see, you know, Jeff did a, and I, when his parents came to pick him up, I said, here's Jeff's painting. I said, well, it was underneath, it was wonderful. And it illustrates a very important thing with little children, is that the process is what's important to them. The picture probably doesn't have as much meaning as the process. And so you can get excited about the process, too. The colors and the lines and the shapes are really exciting things to little children. And they're really working on a pre-conscious level, much like abstract artists are. They're looking at what colors do and the accidental mixing of colors and the shapes that are formed and the lines. And so you can say things about, oh, I like those colors, I like those lines, or tell me about this, what did you put here? And you can also get into naming of colors too, but I guess if I'm really concentrating on the child's artistic expression, I don't worry so much about naming things, although that can be a part of it. I think you have to go with your child and what they're interested in at the time. I'd like to just share a few materials with you. Things that you can have that are very inexpensive. Prang makes a good set of watercolors for children. I think they're worth about $1, $2 maybe. You don't have to get the kind with tons of colors. Just your basic colors are enough. And we've even used the cheapo dime store watercolors, and the children have enjoyed those. So again, you don't have to spend a lot of money on art materials. Dry tempera is a good investment. Now, it's kind of expensive. The jars are, they're not jars, they're in cardboard containers. They're fairly large. But one of those will probably last you 2 or 3 kids worth. And the dry paint doesn't smell. And I have a recipe I can put up for you. If you mix it with some liquid soap and mix it very, very thick, don't be stingy with the pigment and a little water, it's a lot less frustrating to the 2- and 3-year-old child to paint because there's not so much dribbles. Another thing my friend taught me was to get a lot of little like milk containers or baby food jars and put a little paint and a brush in each container. And then you don't worry about the kid getting the yellow brush and the green paint and messing it up for your next child that's going to be painting. And it's a lot less confusing to the child, too. They know if they want green, they pick up the brush and they put it back in. And so those are just things that will simplify it. Big brushes are real helpful for little children, too. The little watercolors come with little tiny brushes, and that's okay. But go to a cheap art brush and get one, you know, that has a nice little fuzzy head about that big. That's real helpful for a little child. Crayons are good. There's a lot of non-toxic watercolor markers. Again, you're going to get some of this. And again, that gets into the tolerance. You know, I tell Jacob, don't do that. No, no, no. You know, and I know tomorrow he's going to do it again. But at least if it's non-toxic, I know that within 2 or 3 baths, it's going to all be off. So,
watercolor markers are the least of my problems.
Yeah.
I've decided. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they always end up
drawing things into the space. Yeah, it's, you know, and again, you know, it's kind of experimenting. Well, what happens if I do this? And again, it's that tolerance between respect and mess. And it's a fine one. I sure can't tell you what the boundaries are. A lot depends on your personality and your child, too. But, you know, if your child is prone to that, it may mean you have to sit down beside them and say, only on the paper. I've probably said that 2,000 times in my life. So, you know, those are the things you work with. Finger paint also can be made at home if you buy cornstarch and just make a real thick, gooey cornstarch and add your dry tempera to it. And a little squirt of hand soap now will help it wash, or dish soap will help it wash out. Homemade clay, or the clay that doesn't dry out, is really the best investment because they're not really making things they want to keep at this point. You will find them doing some very fascinating things where they'll make a shape and they'll say, this is a bed, and then they'll unfold it and they'll go, meow, this is an airplane. Because things can become other things very quickly to the 3 to 5 year old.
What kind of clay are you talking about specifically?
You can make a homemade clay dough. I have a recipe with me if you would like that.
I think I have that, but you said mm-hmm. that doesn't dry out.
Well, you'd put it back in the plastic bag.
Oh,
there are also
okay.
some oil-based clays that you can buy at arts and craft stores that don't dry out, that could be left out. So you might look into those too if you don't want to go through the bother of keeping clay in the refrigerator. That's pretty inexpensive. You can make a batch of clay and let it dry. The thing with that is that it will crumble anyway when it's dry. You can't really keep the objects.
Mm-hmm.
Potter's clay is fine, but again, it's an investment, and it is a little more gooey and messy. It'll go down their arms. So homemade clay or Play-Doh or those kinds of things are good materials for the very young child. Blunt scissors are good. They make a kind now that are sharper on the cutting edge than what used to be. One thing I did for my children was I had a lot of scraps of colored paper around that I cut. And you know, if you're working with teaching them shapes already, you could have a box of circles and triangles and squares, and then say, would you like to paste these down? Cutting for anybody under 4 or 5 is really tough. So one thing you might do is cut a bunch of shapes or tear some, or invite the child to tear and then glue them down. They do enjoy the pasting activity very much, but cutting is real frustrating. Or if you sew, those little material scraps and bits of lace and lightweight buttons can be great fun to glue down on a styrofoam meat tray or a piece of cardboard. So you might think about small things that they can paste without cutting, although they'll need to learn to cut at some time. So look around. They're plastic scissors, and they have a nice sharp edge, but blunt. But again, I wouldn't put those in the hands of anybody less than 3, and probably not 4. The 4 or 5 year old is probably where you'd start there. When children make things, I do try to display them. And one thing I try to do is to never throw it away in their presence. Now, little children will generate an incredible amount of material, and they are very proud of it. And that doesn't mean you have to keep everything. But, you know, if you can display it on your refrigerator for a couple of days and quietly slip it away, I find very seldom did they ever miss something. But one way you say that I value what you do is that you never let them see you putting it in the recycle box. And that's something maybe to keep in mind. It is nice to have a family area to display their art. It gives them a sense of being important and that what they do is important. Would any of you share materials that you have used with little children that they have really enjoyed working with? It's not fair, I took all the biggies.
Well, one thing that comes to mind for me is a can of water and a paintbrush on the sidewalk.
Good one, yes. Especially on a hot summer day. Another thing is sponges, too. If you get some big sponges.
We do chalk on the side.
Yeah, good idea. You can get nice thick chalk now if you go to an art store, or even good dime stores will have it. It's easy to hold on to.
What kind of brush do you use on the sidewalk?
A
paintbrush.
A big paintbrush.
I can see they love that.
Yeah, that's a good activity.
And no cleanup.
Yeah. Another one I forgot to mention is cornmeal and a cookie sheet with little sides. My children would beg to do that. Now, it did mean that the floor got slippery underneath, and we had a wood floor, and it got real slippery, so I had to always make sure I would sweep up when they were done. But they would draw little patterns and pile it up and use spoons to pour it, and it is a nice substitute for sandbox in the winter. So that, and then I would just save the cornmeal from time to time, and that was another inexpensive material.
Potter's clay is really, you mentioned potter's clay, but it's really qualitatively different from Play-Doh. I find when my kids mm-hmm. have Play-Doh, they cook with it.
Uh-huh.
They pretend to make dinner and stuff.
Yeah.
But when I give them potter's clay, they make little sculptures. It's quite different. It's a lot more
yeah.
pliable.
Yes.
And it washes
true.
Out. It's,
yeah,
it's
that's
dirty,
true.
But it washes out real well. I just
mm-hmm.
put them in their undies in the back porch. And,
yeah.
They do a lot different things with it.
Mm-hmm.
They make little snakes and people and stuff,
yeah.
more representation and stuff.
Yeah, thank you. That's a good share.
Do you have, just before you forget, do you have any plans to make like easels that can be used for kids?
I don't have any. They And my children's grandfather made them nice ones. I wonder if one would write like Better Homes and Gardens, if there, like there might be some.
I've really like seen one where you make it out of a cardboard box. Yeah, and I can't exactly, but it's like the two sides of the box and then something to hold it. And it's, you know, if they ruin it, it's no big of this. But I can't remember exactly. You know, you could even just pin it up on the box, on a cardboard box, and let it, I mean, I don't know.
And before we had the easels, my kids would just put the stuff down on the floor and paint, or I had a Formica kitchen counter and we just put it there and they painted flat. And one thing, when you're painting flat when you're little, you don't have so much dripping. So I offer a variety of surfaces to paint on. You could even, if you have like a siding of a house, you could even tape it up with masking tape outside and they could paint if you want that vertical surface to paint on.
One thing we do, which I think increases the kids' awareness that we value their work, is that we get a lot of, well, in my husband's office, they generate a lot of computer printout. We get that paper and they use that for their basic drawing paper, other side of it. And we use it for wrapping paper for all our gifts.
Oh, yes.
They really get a kick out of picking out which drawing they get to use for.
Yeah.
You can use, if you want it to look really nice, you know, if you want it to look more special, you can use freezer paper. Mm-hmm. It has a good texture, you know, they color on the rough side, and it works real good for wrapping paper.
Yeah, I didn't even talk about paper. So shelf paper, freezer paper, newsprint are all inexpensive papers that you can buy.
Yeah. We're starting to have our three-year-old make all the family cards, like greeting cards and stuff, and that is such a big hit with her. You know, she knows she's just old enough, older than her brother, but that's her place. And so there's a lot of honor attached to that.
Yeah, and I know of families who have had like a child's Christmas drawing reproduced for their Christmas card. And that also, little children, you know, because they are really working at a preconscious level, are very in touch with their feelings. And that's why their artwork is so exciting. It can be filled with such joy. And what's kind of one of the sadnesses of children getting into 7 and 8 year olds is that they become so concerned with how it looks and making it look like the real thing, and that's developmental, and you can't, they have to go through that. But they lose some of that joy and spontaneity and real direct expression. Picasso said, you know, that he worked a long time to become like a little child in his art, and he retained that spontaneity of line and feeling that a little child has. And that's one of the things that you can really enjoy about your preschooler's art, is that sense of being so in touch with yourself and your response to something. I'm going to move on to music now. It's incredible how we're just going to hit the field of art, but I think there are many, many things you can do with just tiny infants. I think Irma Bombeck said something about she knew she'd had too many children when she was still swaying in church to the hymns and her kids were no longer in her arms. But anytime there's music, the swaying with a little infant, we probably all do it to calm them, but it's a musical activity. It's really teaching them some basic rhythm. And they're used to your rhythms when they're in the womb. And so rhythm is very familiar to them. I had a woman tell me that her six-month-old child would sit on Grandpa's lap. He loved polkas, and the kid would tap out polka rhythm in perfect rhythm. And it was something he and Grandpa really had a good time doing. So you can hold their hands and clap with them, sway with them, move their feet in the car with car seats. You just get crazy trying to find something else to do. And if you've got the radio on, you can move their legs and feet rhythmically to the music, and it's something that they enjoy a great deal. Same with the rhythmic games, patty cake, and moly poly shoot a bear. Those things are really pre-music expressions. They help the child tune into the elements of music later on. Another thing that you can do is to hold them in your arms and dance. You know, if you like moving to music, that's something to share with your children. And you don't have to use dance position at all, just get a firm grip and away you go. You can make up words to children's songs using your child's name, and that can be a great deal of fun. Where, oh, where is dear little Jacob? Where, oh, where is dear little Jacob? Where, oh, where is dear little Jacob? Way down yonder in the pawpaw patch. That's a big hit with the child who recognizes his name. And you can do it with Flora had a little lamb. You know, don't worry about plagiarizing. It's something that will really help them listen and enjoy to music. Another thing you can do is to let them in on a variety of music that you like to hear. Classical music, jazz, folk music, hymns. I think, you know, if you have one kind of music you particularly like, the tendency is to pass that on to your children, and really, they're much more accepting. My kids will put on modern music more than I will. I'm talking about electronic music. They're a lot more open to it than I am. So we need to take advantage of that. We don't have to only sing them folk songs and children's nursery rhymes. If it has a strong time beat, they will tune in to many other kinds of music, like Sousa marches. You know, if you enjoy listening to that kind of music, I'm amused always at people that are playing classical music to children in the womb. To me, that seems a little far, but then maybe I'm just not as aware as other people are, just the extent that a young child can kind of respond to music and rhythm. But again, share with them your interests. Another thing that I found helpful, especially when children reach difficult ages, was to sing requests to them. Flora, Flora, pick up your socks now. Flora, Flora, pick up the toys now. Flora, Flora, pick up the toys now, and then we'll have a snack. You don't have to rhyme. And sometimes when you have to make the request over and over, it keeps you from going crazy. And it's also now they're hearing more music. And so it's something to think about. There are a good many musicians of great respect who have written specifically for children. Carl Orff, Pete Seeger, Prokofiev, Arlo Guthrie has a wonderful album of children's songs. Even the Disney Boys Choir has put out quite a nice one. And again, you kind of have to hear and decide, is that being sweet or too silly? Is it music that I could hear over and over again, too? Because you want to expose them to some of the good things, too. Another thing when the child is moving on his own is to move to music, especially a piece of music that you both enjoy. When you're moving to music, try to avoid dance steps that you know. And just think about flapping your arms in time with the music, or twirling your head around, or moving up and down. The more you explore different movement, the more your child will. And their natural tendency will be to copy what they see. So if they see you do a big variety of things, they see you spinning around sometimes and sitting down on a chair and going like this with your feet sometimes. It'll give them a wider vocabulary of movement to do too. Another thing that's very helpful is to buy or make rhythm instruments. Creative Playthings used to put out a very nice one. I think Fisher Price puts out a nice one. But the basic instruments of the orchestra are bangers, shakers, and vibrators. You know, when you talk about a cello, well, it's a vibrator, you know. And so if you can put a few stones in a can, you know, you're giving a child a beginning of a percussion section. And so, you know, when you clang together two kitchen pot lids, that's another vibrator. And it's a little percussive too, but there's a... So think about that, bangers, shakers, and ringers. And look around the house. I think your older preschoolers will really enjoy making those. But with younger children, you know, you can make them and give them to the child too. There are a lot of rattles now that make some very interesting sounds. And all of those things are helpful. I've talked a little bit about some things you can do musically with your child. A lot of these ideas came from Ogle Maynard, and she has a book called Music Children and the Young Child. I think that's... I will find it later. I'll give you the title if you would be interested in it. But she takes you all the way up through older children, too. I'm really kind of limiting myself to the youngest ones. But again, the things you start now, you can carry over with the older kids, too. What are some musical activities that some of you have done that you would just share with the group?
Parades.
I don't know if we heard that.
Parades.
Parades. Oh, yes. Yes.
Yes.
Wonderful fun. Mm-hmm. That can be done while they're banging and shaking and ringing, or it could be done while they're singing and clapping, or it could be done while you're playing some music and they're just moving, marching to the music.
Sure. Well, the new thing is exercising, you know, the exercise workouts, and even
just a plain aerobic of them both. The kids really enjoy doing the music that way.
Yeah.
Making up their own stuff. Mm-hmm.
One of my continual struggles are the children's records that tell the child exactly what to do. I've decided that it's okay to a point. But I'd like to play both kinds so that they're not only being told what to move and when to move it, but they also have the chance of listening to music and just responding on their own. Really, when you're told what to move and when to move it, that's more physical education than dance. If you are allowed to figure out your own movement, for the preschooler anyway, that's more an expression in a personal expression of movement, which is dance. Now, certainly as people get older and you learn ballet or jazz or modern, you're being taught steps, so it's not wrong to be taught steps. But especially for the preschool child, what we really want them to do is explore the world. And so we want them to explore as many different movements as they can think of or we can think of. So again, just to encourage a variety of things. There's nothing wrong with records that will say, yeah, now flap your arms like a bird and fly, and then the music will play some very light floating things. That's fine. But try to have both kinds. Okay, moving right along. I just find this very interesting that we can cover all the arts. But again, I mean, the kind of fun thing about little children is that it is in the very beginning stages, and they are a wonderfully appreciative audience. And so you don't have to be a great singer or a great dancer to have a good time with the children and to really help them begin along this wonderful process of exploring the world and putting back their response in some kind of form, whether it's singing, banging on the high chair rhythmically, or making some wild, colorful lines on a paper. That's an expression of your own person, and that's very exciting for your child and for you. When we're talking about drama, really what we're talking about with a preschool child is dramatic play. Certainly when you read a book with a lot of expression, that's drama that the child tunes into. Certainly when they see a program for children on television that's geared for their age, that is a dramatic experience. Or when they see a puppet show or a play. There are very few plays geared to the preschool child. But their primary experience is playing and dramatic play. And again, these are skills that will really help them throughout their lives. The best thing you can do is turn off the TV. We all need silence, and TV is so passive. Be sure you restrict their viewing time and think about how many hours a day your preschooler is watching. And we ran into this with Sesame Street and Mr. Rogers and Electric Company. Now, those are all fine programs. And the Electric Company taught Melina how to read before she went to school. It didn't teach Flora how to read, which is real interesting. Two kids from the same family. One learned to read, one did not. So don't expect TV to teach your children great things. But you know, when I put all those programs together, that was 2 hours of viewing. And that only meant Sesame once a day. And I got some pressure to see Sesame twice a day. And we finally just said no once. So there are even, I think, some restrictions we have to make on good TV. Because the time for playing is so crucial to a child's development that you need to safeguard it. And there are a lot of distractions that are happening in families today that are making it very difficult for children to play. I did work with college students for a number of years at Concordia College, and I found a good number of them could not stand to be in a silent room. They are so used to being surrounded by sound that they are very uncomfortable in silence. And a great deal of creative activity starts in silence. And now I know there are many creative people who work in chaos and loud music, you know, but there has to be that silence and stillness in the center of yourself. And silence in the room will help you find that. Now, if you have a lot of preschoolers at home, you even have to protect one preschooler from another. That quiet time alone is really precious. Or that time, you know, maybe 5 or 10 minutes that they have with you alone is very precious. And as a small child myself, I fought against nap times. But I am convinced that quiet times are equally important when all the children in the family have to do a quiet activity in the house. That will stimulate many, many healthy things, and I think one of them is creativity. I'm sure all of you have good toys. One of the things,
keep in mind when you're buying a toy is, how many ways can my child use it? Could we just go around the room and just say toys that have really been good that you've seen kids play with? It's kind of generic names.
I don't know anything non-generic, the Duplos.
Okay.
Even when we went into the Legos, they still always play with the Duplos. They're okay. More important than the Legos. They build faster. They like those much better.
And that's a kind of a plastic building block. It's a large one that's really nice for the preschooler. Blocks of any kind, wooden blocks that you can make yourself or buy fairly inexpensively, are also very helpful.
But if they're creating something, those, the ones that don't hold together get knocked over and they get upset.
Yeah, which is an advantage to the Duplo. Again, I think the variety of materials is really helpful for the young child. Anybody else have a kind of toy they'd like to share?
Something we bought for the kids when they were like 16 months. It's a shape sorter that's in a bucket. It's like a beach bucket, and it has a lid. But the shapes that go in, it's like about four simple shapes, but they're hollow, like they're little containers themselves. Mm-hmm. And still, at 3.5, Morty uses that. She fills them with water and pours them in the bucket. And it's just, for some reason, it's been a big deal that they can take the lid on and not off, even when they're not using it for shapes. So I've been really fascinated with how many different things they can do with such a simple thing.
Stacking toys, shape toys, putting the shape in the hole. Now, those are important skills, too, and then that toy is often used repeatedly. Are there any others from the group? Things that I've done with my children is to keep a box of dress-up clothes. Those get used and reused. And, if you've got an uncle in the Army, you can ask him to have an old hat. Or it doesn't have to be the whole thing. That's really important. A nurse's hat makes you a nurse. A stethoscope makes you a doctor. A white jacket or a white shirt could be a lab technician or a doctor or a nurse. And so, one of the best things I put in there was a piece of striped curtain. And my kids have been Arabs, and they've done Bible plays, and they've been gypsies. Now, from this little square of striped material, so you might think about buying remnants that are in bright colors. Or another thing is an old fake fur coat. Now, that's pretty bulky. But if you're running like a preschool, I've seen kids who just love those because they're soft and big, and they make them feel big and important. But hats and parts of things that the child can have access to, we find got used over and over again. You can also have specific toys, like cars and trucks and dishes, because they will want to duplicate activities they see in the real world, and picture books. The general rule of how many ways can my child use it is a good one for buying toys, but there are exceptions. Like a picture book can really only be used to be read, to read or be read to, and that's fine. So a variety of things, climbing toys, manipulative toys, toys that will stimulate their imagination. A box of junk, like those styrofoam pieces, will often fascinate children for a long time. Or refrigerator cartons. There are many things that can be just had for nothing that, while they will fill your living room, will provide a good day's entertainment to a child. Or your backyard. And those might be good summer toys if you live in a small place. Go down to a furniture store, get a big carton, and the child may request that you cut out doors and windows, and they may not. They may just like climbing in and out and rolling in it and things like that. You can encourage dramatic play in many, many ways. When my daughter was 2 or 3, we had to play shoe store every time she put on a pair of shoes. It was, "Well, little girl, these are very nice shoes. These have buckles on them, and why don't you try these on? I think they're going to look very nice." And then she'd walk around in them. And that was a ritual we did every time she put our shoes on. I think because new shoes were so special to her. And also, I was playing with her, and it was like a 30-second game. And I had time for a 30-second game. I didn't have time to play grocery store for an hour. But I could play little 30-second games during the day. And you might look for those in which you can interact with the child just very briefly. Jacob's first game was bye-bye. And partly because I was going to school, and for a while I had to go every day. And so now he goes to the door, opens the door, says bye-bye, and I say, "Bye-bye, Jacob, where are you going?" He can't answer, but then I say, "Be back soon, come back." And really what I'm doing is reversing roles. I was going and he was staying. Now he gets to go and I stay. And it is very pleasurable to him. And it's a way for him to figure out, well, what was mommy doing when she'd walk out that door? And did she really mean it when she said, come back? Because, you know, he's playing it out. And that's really what the dramatic play does. When they put on your shoes or daddy's shoes, they are working out, what is it like to be mommy or daddy? So allow them to do that. That's really important ways for them to figure out, what's it like to be an adult? And again, that goes back to the dress-up box. To have a purse says, what's it like to be an adult? The same with baby dolls. What's it like to care for one? And another thing you can do, too, if the child is going through the room, rum, 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 and it's obvious they're on an imaginary motorcycle, all you have to say is, boy, you're on a fast motorbike. And the child says, it's okay for me to play. And that's just the amount of encouragement they need. You don't have to spend hours pretending with them. But accepting their play and providing stimulating materials are, I think, the most valuable thing you can do. In fact, and I think sometimes we step in too much, the child really needs to learn to play by himself or with others or to carry through his own ideas. And, you know, if you're working with a group of children, you may need to step in to get them started. But one of the good things you can do as an adult is after they've started to pull back and see if they can carry it through. But surely you can enjoy your child's imaginative play and to play with them when they request you to. And again, it doesn't have to be a long period of time. It can be those little mini dramas of the shoe store, the grocery store, or saying bye-bye. Try not to disturb absorbed playing. And believe me, I went through that. I have got to get to class now. We have got to go to the sitters right now. And the building might have been half finished. And the tent was just put up. And I guess I always felt a little guilty when I did it. And I'm saying to you right now, I did it and I still do it. But when you see a child absorbed in play, if you can go to the grocery store in 15 minutes, your child will probably be done with those cars and trucks or building that building or playing that game of house. And you will have done them a service as far as not interrupting the concentration. A lot of teachers are saying now that children are coming to school unable to concentrate. And part of that may be television watching. I think that's a biggie. But it also may be that we're so regimented in our lives is that, you know, we have to be at certain places at certain times, and we often will disturb children when they are concentrating and are absorbed in playing. And what they're doing is a very important work. And if you can respect it and adjust your schedule around it when you can, you are doing your child a real favor as far as their study skills later on, and also just their penetration into this thing that is interesting them. And again, those levels are really going to vary. My oldest daughter would paint for 15 minutes. My youngest daughter for 3. You know, I thought the oldest was normal till I had the younger, you know. So don't let anybody tell you how long a child should play at a certain point. And again, try to let them play until the absorption ends. That's true about picking up toys, too. Sometimes they'll build a little monument. I'm talking mainly about the 3, 4, and 5-year-olds. One day, Melina lined up some glass jars, which was forbidden to do, because they weren't to play with glass, but she got into the recycle box, and she lined them all up, and my husband took a picture of it because he said, she is organizing materials that is basically what an artist does. And there are monuments in Europe where ancient peoples have lined up stones. We don't know why they did it, but they did exactly the same thing she did, only on a larger scale. So if you can respect the monuments that they make, the little stick things that they build, and they may not even be able to tell you what it is. But if you can vacuum around, well, I shouldn't say that. I never vacuum around it. Things get picked up when I vacuum. But if you can walk around it for the end of the day, that can be very helpful to the child. Because what they have made at that point may have some real significance for them that they may not even be able to verbalize. Children will express aggressive and negative feelings in play. They will beat on their babies. And don't be upset with that. Or if you're seeing children who are just walloping the dickens out of a baby, it may mean that they got a light tap on the bottom from their mother who had just come to the end of her rope with the child running into the street. But now they're going to amplify that when they're playing. The healthy child will always do that. And don't feel you're a bad parent or that your child is somehow weird if they begin to act out some very aggressive and negative things. Now, of course, the boundary is I won't let my children destroy their toys. We pay good money for those, and I don't want them destroyed. So there are times when I would have to pick up Jacob and say, no, you're going to break it if you do that. I won't let you break your toy. And he may get very angry at me and be very frustrated. But the young child really reaches point where they can't control themselves, and where you as the adult step in and say, this is the limit, and we pull you away. Or the same is true with aggressive play directed toward another child. I won't let you hit him. I just can't let you hit him. Let's go hit the people. And you can again have alternatives. A lot of preschools will have punching bags for kids, or punching animals that you push down and they come back up. So, you know, you might think about that if you have a child especially who seems to be having a lot of negative feelings. Certainly when another sibling enters the family, there's going to be a lot of worries and negative feelings that are going to come out in play. And that's okay. In fact, play is a wonderful release. You know, when I'm running down the road, when I'm running, I'm really letting out a lot of hostility and aggression. Only I'm not vocalizing it like my children are. You know, I can feel I'm doing this wonderful thing for my body. But also there, you know, as I'm letting out some anger and frustration in a way that's real healthy. And so allow your children to do that. The last thing I'd just like to say is that children will often get imaginary friends. And they will get them when they need them. And they do understand the difference between reality and fantasy. If the child is an only child or has few playmates, they are more likely to invent imaginary friends. But most children do. It's normal, don't worry about it. If they hold on to them, if they would rather play with this imaginary friend than with real children, you might work more toward drawing them or providing them with more children to play with. Because really what they're doing is substituting with their imaginations their great need to be with people. And here I'm talking about the 3 to 5 year old child. They really need to be with other children. And it's worth importing them to your neighborhood if necessary. And it playing with other children doesn't, you can't replace it by playing with them yourself. They really need to be around other children their age. And when they aren't, they invent friends. We were in Paris with our 2-year-old. When we left Stuart, she had one imaginary friend, that was Bowie. When we got to Paris and she was alone with us for 2 weeks, Bowie became Bowie, Powie, Caco, and I don't know how many others. They just multiplied until we found some playmates. And that's normal, don't worry about it. But if there's a lot of time spent, think about trying to get more children in. They will get, you know, I said they can distinguish between reality and fantasy. The line gets real blurry for a tiny child. Dick played a game with Laura, she loved Jack and the Beanstalk when she was about 3. So she'd say, be the giant, Daddy. So he was the giant, so I'm gonna come and catch you, fee, fi, fo, fum. And then she'd run, and then when she got scared of him, she'd go, chop, chop, chop. Because when the tension level got too high, he had to fall over dead. And there were times when I could see in her eyes that she really got that wild, I'm really scared. You know, it started out just good fun. And then at some point, the line got passed. And so when you're playing games with your kids, and again, they love the rough and tumble and the, I'm going to come and get you. When you see that wild look, it means that I'm not sure where the game is and where reality is. And the same when they're viewing scary TV programs or movies. We took Flora to E.T. when she must have been 5. And we stood out in the hall and watched it. She wanted to see it, but it was just too scary. So I held her in my arms. We were in the doorway, and it seemed like that extra frame provided just the amount of reality that she needed to view the fantasy on the picture. So a healthy child distinguishes reality from fantasy. The preschool child will sometimes blur those in the midst of a game or the excitement of the experience. And that's a good clue that you need to step in and provide some kind of a safety net. You know, whether maybe let's do something else, or if you can figure out a way that you can, if you're scaring them, if you can die, or one of the fun things I did with preschoolers is that we played some music, and I was the Wicked Witch, and then they had seen Oz so many times at the end of the music they threw water on me and I went into a puddle. I melted into a puddle. And they liked that kind of playing. So as long as they've got that safety belt, that's fine. I really apologize for how much I've talked. I didn't know how else to do this. I hope in my other sessions there will be a lot more talking and sharing. Could you share some game play or dramatic play or just play things that your kids have really enjoyed? I think we've got about 5 minutes left here. You know, I just wanted to make a comment, and it doesn't have anything to do, but, you know, my kids, our oldest is going into kindergarten, and we've really encouraged them with art things. You know, we enjoy doing that. But, you know, when they get to school, and I know this is, our daughter is, she's not a great artist. She enjoys it. She likes what she does. And to this day, if you ask her, what are you good in? She'll say, I'm good in art. But she sees the score. She gets a grade in art, and it's a C. Mm-hmm. She's at an age, she's going into fifth grade. And you know, that's the hardest thing to deal with, because she really feels good about herself mm-hmm. in art. Mm-hmm. And somebody else is saying to her, and I, you know, if, as an unbiased observer, I'd say it's probably true. And yet, it really bothers me, because I think to myself, why do we have to do that to kids? To grade them against other kids. Mm-hmm. And it bothers me, because she does feel good, and I don't know how long it's going to continue.
You might talk to your teachers. Now, I think the most progressive schools grade children on their involvement in the material, the satisfaction they take, their ability to carry through the project to the end of the project. And I'm fortunate my kids' grade school will grade satisfactory, excellent, or they'll do just plus or okay.
Well, even our youngest is very shy, or our middle is very shy in other situations. At home, she's the outgoing one, but they mark her initiative as being down, because she's not very vocal, and she doesn't, but she's a very creative child. I mean, we mm-hmm. see that, and I think, I feel a need to say that to somebody who's going to listen to it, because it just kills you, because these kids are so special, you know, when you send them out. Yeah. And then people say, well, you're okay, but, you know, you're nothing. And I think, oh, even if she's not great, that's not our concern. Our concern is to say, it's okay if you're not, you know, if nobody else likes it, if you feel good. Yeah. But I don't think they get that message, and it bothers me very much.
Yeah, I think it's a real problem in education. A lot of your children's teachers are going to be very ignorant in children's art, because a lot of teachers' colleges are not providing them with training. So it might be very valuable for you to do your own reading on children's art, and then try to, through your PTL or PTA, work toward better arts educations. I am ill with the state of arts education in our public and private schools. Nobody's doing a good job. And it's, I think, you know, a whole new topic to work with. But be prepared for that. You may have some people that are pretty ignorant working with your kids in the arts.
Would you have some kind of books, you know, that we could...
Kaplan puts out a wonderful book on children's development in art. And I can't tell you her first name. It was the text that I had when I was in college. It's K-A-P-L-A-N. And she talks about the stages of development. She studied children's art all through the world. And that's real helpful. Mm-hmm. Well, enjoy your children's art. It's just, for me, it was one of the things that made parenting worth it all. It's just, they have such marvelous insight into the world, and you don't have to be a great artist to dance and to sing and to draw with them, and just have a real good time and provide them again with materials and tolerance and stimulation, and your child, I think, will become that kind of creative, expressive person that's going to help him be a whole person, and that's really the aim of the arts, finally, for all of us. Thank you for coming and sharing your ideas.
Thank you.
Can we get some of your recipes?
Yes, I have those with me. I almost said they hate to reproduce here.
So it's so obvious. I'm getting used to this.
It's like this almost every day. Usually I get them a nap.
I did this in the church too.
I have one happy body goes to sleep. I heard our little child say that in the bedroom, she didn't think I was listening. Mm-hmm. She said,
I'm not doing
every day.
Yeah.
Mine
hits
me
to be more into the church here and more cooperative about it here.
Why don't you take this with you? Sometime when you see me, I'll be here 2 weeks. I'm either sure they number eight or if you see me, you'll find something to hand out.
But then you don't just know.
You have to leave right now?
Well, I need to meet my husband for dinner. Isn't it 5?
At 5?
Yeah, early ones at 5.
Do you want
I didn't get a chance to tell people in Narnia what a neat place I thought that was this morning. Are you working at Narnia?
Tomorrow.
Yeah, that's okay.
Yeah.
All right, and then I'll go out and
sit on the floor today. That sounds good.
Okay.
So
well, 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 I want to miss you.
Proper tournament, you know, whether for vacuum or even the 1 year old who used to only say ball and dig all the balls out.
Yeah.
Now running it right side up instead of upside down.
Yeah.
Not that it matters. And it's vacuum.
Yeah.
And
or that could be the lawnmower.
3 year old over the vacuum.
Yeah. Or it could be the lawnmower too.
Yeah, whatever it is, but he's running. He's running that.
Yeah.
And,
it's
know,
so
before
exciting.
It was just ball.
I just wanted to, where are you from? Can you sit Concordia?
I'm from Seward, Nebraska.
Oh, okay. Is this a Concordia College?
Yeah, there's so many of those.
I'm sure that there are,
Are you from a Concordia graduate?
No, I'm from St. Paul, Minnesota.
Oh,
but I have a friend that's studying, she used to be in daycare, and she's studying children's play, or creative play.
Right
now, she's over at St. Thomas College, and I don't know why, but it seems to me there's an instructor there that's supposed to be one from either she studied in California or she came from California or something like that, but she's just excellent and she's taking her class right now and she's just it's just wonderful.
Yeah. There's some real good books written on creative play for children. And this was such a tiny overview, but I was really trying to hit the highlights for home.
Well, I know, like with herself, she was really misunderstood by a lot of people when she had a daycare because her basement too, she had a wall that she let them color in right on. Mm-hmm. If they left the markers off, they were able to dip it in water. Maybe some of that should have been more structured or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But it was real neat how she was let them express themselves, where some of them that are so structured weren't, they didn't give them enough playtime in the area where they could.
When we taught it in Montessori school at a very wealthy neighborhood. And we let the children paint, and they were petrified getting paint even on the paint shirt.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing they did was they would paint holes in the paper. They would not give up the paper because they got to paint so seldom that they were afraid you would not let them paint anymore. I mean, these are kids from wealthy homes, but they're living in poverty. They really are. There is such concern with neatness that they don't have the freedom to play with elements. And these children were so timid and so uptight at age 3 and 4. I just thought, ooh, that's spooky.
I think especially with my first one, I was more tight with her.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know,
well, you are. I mean, everybody is.
But, you know, and you know, you're certainly, children make you learn and make you grow and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
I think with the second one, you know that he's too. Such a difference, but
I just laugh at myself and I say, well, will it kill him if he does that? I mean, that's really an extreme, and I certainly wouldn't go that far, but that thought goes through my head.
The same with like the puddles and the mud and stuff. They get back there and they get with sticks and they're playing fishing in the pond. And
and if you can just say, okay, we'll put old clothes on, they can do that.
Yeah,
you know?
Right.
And I think my inclination always was, well, don't get wet, stay clean, and that's just kind of silly. I learned a lot from friends. I really did. And Arlen is such a good children's art teacher.